regurgitating Steinmetz and use an open-faced club, a sandwich.
Open-faced club sandwich.
Hello and welcome to part three of Advanced Ball Striking with Australian golf legend Billy Dunk. My name's Rod Morrie, and back in February this year, myself and Lag Pressure had the chance to spend a couple of hours on the phone with Bill Dunk, undoubtedly one of Australia's most accomplished players. At the end of part two, Bill filled us in on some of the history between himself and Peter Thompson, and also how he approached trying to win a golf tournament when he was in with a chance. Today in part three, we'll pick it up where we left off, with Bill explaining how winning golf tournaments really comes down to giving yourself a chance.
I never ever thought about it in those days. You know, all you thought about was, if I get a chance to win, I'll try. You know, and that's what you do in most golf tournaments. I mean, and especially you see it in America. You play yourself into a position where you've got a chance. And then you've got to hold it together over the last few holes. And
it's what the really good players always say, isn't it, Bill? Just give me a chance with nine holes to go, whereas the less wise think that golf works somehow differently, that you can somehow win the tournament on Thursday or Friday. But the really good players understand, don't they, that all you can do is give yourself a chance.
Yeah, you've got to get yourself in position, and then if you have that little bit of luck that goes with you, you know, all that putt that you might not have, that's over 6 or 8 feet, you know, you might be 10 or 15 feet, and it goes in, and you think, well, I've got a chance here. Let's do it. And just hold yourself together from there.
Did you find that some days, Bill, I think it's happened to all of us at some point, where something happens maybe early in a round and you just know, you've got a feeling that it's all going to go right today with the amount of really low scores that you've shot in your life. Is that a feeling that you're familiar with? Could you just tell sometimes it was your day?
Well, sometimes I could see a line to the hole and all you had to do is hit along that line. And it was about 2 inches wide and it looked black. And they'd go in.
Like, really, you could actually sort of see that in your mind's eye, a black line that you just had to follow.
And, I've had it where you've holed six putts in a line that you were talking about that Coffs Harbour thing. I got to be 10 under after 10 holes and then lipped it out on the next hole. And a freak putt that just went around the hole, give it a horseshoe around it, and just sat on the lip. And then I held it at the next hole to go 11 under, and then the next hole was a par 3, about a 5 or 6 iron shot. And I've hit the flag. And if it's missed the flag, it's only a foot away, you know, or a couple of feet. But now it's nearly ricocheted off the green. And I almost three-putted and didn't hold another putt. All of a sudden it was gone, you know, that bit of magic. So, and it didn't matter how hard I tried, I couldn't get that ball in the hole after that. So,
Did you always... I'm absolutely intrigued by this notion that you could see a line, because there's something mystical about putting, isn't there, Bill, at every level of the game? And you mentioned Woods earlier, who just didn't seem to miss a putt for about 13 or 14 years, by my calculation. He just never missed a putt. But there's something mystical about it, isn't it? There's a lot of time and effort devoted to how to swing the club and what you need to do physically, but putting is somehow a different game, isn't it? Did you always have that? Some days you would just see a line?
No. I used to practice a hell of a lot with my putter, too. Some days it didn't matter how well you hit the putt, it wasn't going in. You know, I was used to work on the theory that I've got I've got three chances to hold this. It'll either go in the middle, the right-hand corner, or the left-hand corner.
What did you practice, Bill, on putting? Were you just always just feeling the speed? Speed is obviously so important practicing. What did you focus on when you were practicing putting?
I used to practice long putts all the time. Never short putts. I used to practice a few short putts, but not many. But I'd practice as long as I can get on the putting green.
Interesting.
And just get
so
it to go
speed.
The distance. Get it to go speed. The distance. Yeah.
Speed.
So if you felt you had the speed down on the long putts, then you weren't going to have any trouble with the speed on the short putts.
No. Well, I mean, all you've got to do is stay still. You can nearly kick them in if on a short putt. Although as you get older, it's harder to kick. But anyway, you watch all those young bucks on TV these days. They just walk around those small. They don't even line them up. They just walk around, go hammer straight in, you know. And I used to be like that, but all of a sudden I've got to look at them these days.
Well, when one or two start to miss, and suddenly they loom large in the memory, don't they, Bill?
Yeah, I think the hole moves. whatever it is.
Did you use a light putter or a heavy putter?
Fairly heavy.
Fairly heavy. So was the shaft pretty firm also?
It was just a putter shaft.
Just a putter shaft. But you like the heavy head with the putter?
Yeah, it was an old Arnold Palmer.
Okay, so you used a heel shafted putter.
Yeah, a blade putter. Yeah, mm-hmm. with a fair bit of loft on it.
So you'd put your hands? Would you put your hands a little forward? Did you kind of hit down on your putts a little bit?
When I got nervous.
What? Never intentionally.
No, just it happened. So I like a bit of a putter with a bit of loft on it, so that if I do get forward a little bit, I don't bounce it as much. So
you like the ball to loft out of its indentation in the green, get it so it wouldn't jump sideways.
Yeah. So, everyone says putt with your shoulders these days. I never did. I was a hand putter.
Yeah, you putted with your wrist. Did you feel that the feel of the speed was better in the hands and the wrist, probably?
Yeah, I mean, I look at them these days and they're going cross-handed, and I think that's only an excuse. And all those people that putt well cross-handed have always been good putters. And
did you let the putter head kind of open up a little bit, like Crenshaw going back, or did you try and kind of keep it square, sort of tuck and block it?
No, I let it open and shut. Mm-hmm.
So you were kind of an arc putter then?
Yeah. I tried to make it like my golf swing. Try to get it to stay square to the plane, not...
Mm-hmm. Not the line.
Not the line, no. Mm. So, and it was only just it was hardly any, but I wasn't always used to make sure that I always... hit it with a release.
So, when you say release, what, like a release of the hands?
Yeah, like if you're playing an iron shot, you got to make a release to make the thing happen, right? So you got to make a hit. And as soon as you start pulling up on it, the blade opens, the ball goes nowhere. So I've always been concentrate on making a release as I hit the putt. And funnily enough, you don't hook it.
Did you set the lie angle of your putter a little flat like your irons also similar?
Yeah, it was a little flatter, a little longer.
Flat.
I always putted with it. I always used a half inch longer putter.
You remember Isao Aoki? You know, he had a really low hands and a very flat putting stroke and very wristy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I was always standing up taller than that.
Right, right.
What about ball position, Bill, in both putting and on
forward or centre?
Yeah. So, for all shots, irons, driver.
Yeah, I didn't change the ball position too much.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on whether you're standing on a hill or, you know, just adjusted so that you're balanced.
Did you feel you were more of a sweeper? Did you kind of pick the ball a little more clean and not take deep divots, or did you kind of dig down into it when you were playing?
Well, using the small ball for the most of my life, you had to hit down on it. more so than you would with the big ball. So, and when I first started to use the big ball, I found that I was flying it too high, because, and then I had to adjust that a little bit and try and hit it cleaner. So, but I've always hit a divot.
The small ball flew a little straighter and a little lower, right?
Well, I don't know about straighter, but it flew lower for sure.
Lower, right. It might have made the hole look a little bigger too when you were putting, huh?
Yes. Although if you get a tennis ball and you putt it, it seems to hang onto the edge of the hole easier. Have you ever tried that?
I haven't tried that, Bill, I must say, no.
So if you get a tennis ball, and just on short putts, and it hits the edge of the hole, it'll keep going around until it falls in. So if you've got the right speed.
Oh,
so I'm not sure that, you know, a little ball into a big hole, after all, it's not that much difference. It's only something or other.
I wanted to ask you, Bill, about just persimmon drivers. A lot of my students are hitting persimmons, and what is it you looked for in a persimmon driver? Like, was there a certain head shape you liked, or the a grain pattern, or certain any type of inserts that you liked in them?
Bill, just a space in the garage would have been the most important thing. You said you had 200 of them. You would have just had trouble finding a spot for one, wouldn't you?
When I say 200, I've tried to make up so many of these heads with steel shafts, with graphite shafts and steel heads, titanium heads, you name it. I've tried them all over the last 10 or 15 years, and I must have had 200 of them by then, but the ones that didn't work, I gave to somebody or got rid of them, and there it was. But
on the persimmons, what did you like in the persimmons?
With the persimmon, I liked a deep block and a curved face both ways.
You liked a lot of bulge and roll?
Bulge and roll, yeah.
What kind of blocks were you using? Were you hitting McGregor stuff or
Spalding? I don't know what they were, but I was in there. There was a fellow by the name of Ziggy, and he was a woodmaker at PGF. Well, it wasn't PGF back then. It was Colgate owned the place anyway at one stage. And I was in there one time, and I found this big drum of wood heads. And I said, I want you to make me up a couple of these. And it was like old Sandy at Slazenger. I mean, he was the star with irons, and old Ziggy was the star with woods. And he used to make them up and made some, they called it the Ziggy Special. So it was a very deep block anyway.
And this was down in Australia?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're having your persimmons custom made down there.
Yeah.
What kind of inserts? Were you using fiber inserts, or were you
fiber
using
inserts?
A
yeah, fiber inserts. Fiber? Yeah. Mm.
Okay. Was there a different relationship with the golf club and the player back then, Bill? It seems to me there's something a lot warmer about a wooden wood than a modern driver, where we seem to see players, you know, they could have it, they'll take out four or five in a practice round and decide which one they're going to hit. It seems to me it was a different time when you had your clubs custom made, that you, if you found a driver you liked, you stayed with it, and you perhaps had more of an emotional response to it.
It's a bit like being married, isn't it? You find the one you like and stick with it.
Well, yeah. But the difference being, of course, you don't have 200 ex-wives in your garage, Bill.
That's right. I've only got one. I've been married for the last 300 years, I think it is.
You've been very lucky, I would think.
46 years, anyway.
What role does that play in golf at the top level? I imagine to have that security and stability and that sort of anchor at home, anchor not in a bad way, Mrs. Dunk, please don't get the wrong idea, but to have that anchor at home, that must help, I would think. We tend to see a lot of players have their best years after they have children.
Yeah, well, in my situation, I wouldn't be sitting here right now talking to you if it wasn't for her. So it's just one of those things, you know. She kept the home front working. Didn't matter what happened. Worked like hell. She's only a little thing too. And I wouldn't change one bit of it, to be honest. So
that's great.
That is fabulous, Bill. And I suspect that the real power with Mrs. Dunk lies in the fact that when she's sick of you sitting here talking to us, that will be the end of it.
That's right. I'm out of here then.
That's exactly right, once there's something to be done. Just so the listeners know, when we first rang Bill this morning, he'd been sent out to buy cream at 8 o'clock this morning. I said to you, Bill, I don't think there's too many five-time Australian PGA champions being sent out on a Saturday morning generally to buy cream. And that's a wonderful thing that you...
Well, I like to eat too, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly right. In so, sort of comfort.
Bill, I wanted to ask you, the Australian Open is an odd tournament that you didn't win for some reason. You must have had some close calls. Anything come to memory about the Australian Open?
Well, they always used to import fellas like by the name of Palmer, Nicklaus, and Player.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my opportunities to win and couldn't quite get past them. So... ended a couple of times. And
Gary Player, what did you think of Gary Player's game?
Gary could maneuver the ball like you wouldn't believe it at one stage. He was great to watch. Did you ever see a fellow by the name of Harold Henning play? Well, you'd know Harold. He's living over there these days.
I didn't, lag.
I know the name. I know the name, yes.
Well, Harold was probably a better striker than Gary. Don't tell Gary that, but... and he was a big, strong man, but he loved a bit of the nightlife and all that sort of stuff, and in those days...
get away with that.
Yeah, well, they weren't quite as keen. He used to make too much money anyway. And... but he was a hell of a player. And
how about Frank Phillips? You must have played a lot against Frank.
Played, yeah, I see him occasionally. We went to Nagel's 90th birthday the other day, and he was there. He hasn't changed much. His back's gone on him, but other than that, he still plays.
He's got a wonderful zest for life, hasn't he, Frank?
He has, yeah.
He was known as a great ball striker, from what I understand.
Yeah, he was long off the tee. Because he'd be 6 foot three, I suppose, and a real loose, supple character. And he won lots of stuff. So.
It's funny you should mention Frank Lagg, because, Bill, I was down at Mount Broughton recently, which I think you helped Frank co-design the course down there in the southern.
Well, they say that, but anyway, we were part of the system down there. They've got a hole named after me down there.
The thing that struck me though was pardon me, they were having a ladies' event there, a ladies' program, and young Catherine Hull, who is a real rising star of Australian women's golf, and you couldn't find a nicer person. I must say, she is just delightful. And Frank said to me, I was chatting to him just before the last round, and I said to him, Frank, who have you got your money on? There was a young player there who'd sort of surprised everybody, including herself, I think, by taking the first round lead, and Catherine was a couple of shots back. And he said to me, this Catherine Hull, you watch her. She is as good as anybody I've seen in the mind. And he said that he'd had a really good chat to her the night before, and that she was interested, and she sought him out, and she asked his advice, and they had a really good chat about golf. It seems to me that not as much goes on of that, pardon me, as would be healthy for a lot of younger players. Have you mentored any younger players, or do you find, do people ever seek you out and say, Bill, I'm thinking about going down this path, have you got any advice? Do we see enough of that?
There's lots of people, but what you got to do is sort of say to them, well, it's up to you, more than anything else. So I mean, if you want to spend the time at it and do it, you probably can. But I've seen lots of people in my lifetime that have been playing the game and practice like hell and never get anything out of it. And
any thoughts as to why that is, Bill? Are some people just not good enough, or are there other forces at work?
I think it's more in the mental stakes than anything else. I don't know, to be honest, because, I mean, there's so many people out there with talent, and whether they want to use it or not is another thing. So,
attitude's pretty crucial, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Are you born with that, or can you learn it?
I would say that you'd have to be able to learn it. You get fellas like Tom Weisskopf. I can always remember playing in Montreal. Laval sur le Lac was the name of the golf course. Laval on the lake. And I was out there in the practice round and having a putt on one of the greens, and he hit off the next tee, and I thought someone had shot a rifle off. And I got to play with him in the first two rounds of the tournament. It was a World Cup or something. What they have there? They don't call it the World Cup these days, but
it was the Canada Cup.
Canada Cup, yeah, that might have been it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, is that it?
I think the Canada Cup.
Yeah, and I got to play with him, and he'd only just gotten married. And he three-putted a couple of greens and whatever, and he was about to walk off. And his wife and I are talking to him. "No, stay and play." I said, "Shit, if I had your talent, I'd be here, you know." And anyway, the bugger stayed, and I finished seventh in the tournament, and he ran third. So, should have let him go.
I was going to say, you should have let him go.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you are. It's funny, isn't it, Bill? My mind turns to Bob Stanton, who had that just remarkable natural talent. But didn't achieve the things in the game that, from the outside, it looks like he should have.
No, it's amazing how incidentals get in your way. So,
I think Bob shot 63 around New South Wales Golf Club only about 7 or 8 years ago, and had
the
club for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years or something.
Yeah,
in a sort of serious way.
He could still play.
Mm. Yeah.
But I don't think he wanted to as much as...
No.
It's
hard for us mortals to understand, isn't it, Bill, that somebody could have that sort of talent for the game but have no real interest in it.
Yes, but especially when you feel that you haven't got near as much as they have, you know, talent, I mean. So,
and makes you want to throttle them, doesn't it?
Grab it
them
does,
by the neck and shake them and say, get on with it.
Yeah. So, and they make it look so easy.
Wouldn't you say the distance off the tee back then wasn't as critical maybe as it is now? Because you had a guy, I'm sure you must have played against George Bear, right? He was an incredibly long hitter during the time, but didn't win a lot of tournaments.
No, George was sort of, he'd hit the odd one really long, and the rest of them were, you know, he didn't get them in the middle of the club.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, you know, back then, he must have been 6'4", big, strong sucker. And
250?
He could, and his swing was pretty good. And but it's just one of those things. I don't think he concentrated enough on it, or whatever. Because you think he's got to win every tournament he stands up in, but he didn't do that. So.
There's something about hitting the ball straight down the middle and hitting a lot of greens, you know. And I think there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, well, you've got to be able to do what you can do yourself. And that's more to the point than anything else. I mean, you've got to divorce yourself from those other people and say, well, I've got to play the golf course this way. Don't look at him, because he's playing it a different way than what I do. And then you set yourself to go right corner of the fairway, middle of the green, two putts, and keep doing that. And but if you look at those guys, they go and drive 2-iron par 5, and well, 3-iron, 5-iron sometimes. And you think, you know, and you, here you are sort of going at it with two woods, and then you've got to make up your mind, are you good enough to hit that next wood on the green, because you're going at it so hard. And, you know, it's one of those things. You've got to play it as you see it.
You can't play somebody else's game, can you? That's
no. Bill, when you went at a par five, if you weren't going to hit the green in two, would you lay up back 60, 80 yards to give yourself a little more spin on your wedge shot, or would you try and get it up close to the green?
I'd try and get it as close as I could, because I figured I had more chance of making a birdie if I was up close. So closer you got to it, the easier it became.
Bill, you would have played a lot of match play, even at the professional level, far more so than what we see in this day and age. And some of those things you're speaking about there become critical in a match play situation, don't they? Because you are playing one-on-one. It's easier to tell yourself you can't play somebody else's game when you're just two players in a field of 150. But when it's just you against the other person and they keep hitting it 50 yards past you, that makes it more difficult to maintain that mindset, doesn't it?
Oh, it does, yeah, because you feel like you're playing a different golf course. But once again, you still got to do the same things.
And it seems to me that that's where the competitor comes out. And as I said, I get the feeling from the very brief meeting we had at Kell's 90th, but that you are naturally competitive, and in some ways that almost might work to your advantage. If someone wants, you know, keeps hitting it past you, that makes you put your head down more. Is there anything to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know whether I am or not. They tell me I am, but I'm not sure that that's what it is. So I've never really thought about it.
I get the feeling in some ways, Bill, that Lag and myself and probably others around the place have maybe given more thought to your golf game than perhaps you have, that your way of playing golf was just to go out and play. Is there something in that?
Yeah, well, that's, as I said for a start, I try and make it as simple as I possibly can, because I'm a simple person. So there it is. So, and I'm more interested in hitting shots, staying balanced, just keep it in play more than anything else.
Do you think it was simpler to play by feel rather than yardages?
These days I always keep the cards from that I've in my car. I've got probably 60 cards of different golf courses, and if I go there, if I was going to go and play tomorrow, which I'm not, but which I'd go and get one of those cards and take it with me. And I work more by yardage these days than I do from feel, because I don't see as well as I used to.
Sure, that's a reasonable consideration. But when you were playing in your prime, do you feel that your ability to gauge distances was just as good as if you were using yardages? Because there's so many other factors of wind and humidity and the lie and all these things.
Yeah, I'm not, as I said, for the last 20 years, I'd used yardages. So, and I more or less relied on those.
Well, we've taken up an awful lot of your time, so we'll look towards wrapping it up. A couple of things I wanted to ask you about. You said you hadn't played for about 9 years. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Has it just been a health thing, a physical thing? Did you lose interest in the game?
Mainly because of my ear. Lost a bit of balance. It's hard work for me to I lost the balance nerve out of my right ear. And I'm as deaf as a post on that side these days. But I'm not dead.
Well, we can tell that.
And that, and that's the main thing. Yeah. And I just felt that it was too hard for the amount of work that I had to put into it to stay anywhere near where I was. And I found it so much easier, and I'm so much easier to get on with. Even my wife says that. So she doesn't call me that little rotten thingamajig every day now, only every second day. I just found that I don't want to play it just for pleasure. That might be where that competitive bit comes out. And I've never ever wanted to take my mate's money, which means I don't gamble. I just find it too damn hard to play these days.
Bill Dunk there with some fabulous insights into how he used to play the game and a little bit about why he gave it away a few years ago. When we come back with Bill next week for the last installment in this interview, we'll find out what Bill's up to now and some of his thoughts on the modern game.